Refire. Don't retire. Make the rest of your life the best of your life. Written by Ken Blanchard and Morton Shavitz. Narrated by Joe Bronzi. To Zig Ziglar, 1926 to 2012. An author, salesman, motivational speaker, and inspiring friend who first introduced Ken to the concept of refiring. With his incredible positive energy, Zig made a difference in the lives of everyone with whom he came in contact. Introduction. It's often said that there is no such thing as a coincidence. Given the dynamic nature of the universe, when things happen, they happen for a reason. So when the two of us met on an early morning flight from San Diego to New York, it was not by chance. Perhaps it was serendipity, something that was destined to happen, that was meant to be. If we pursue this concept further, we find the Yiddish word bashert, which roughly translates into a happy, joyous event that was meant for good. So what are you into and what's new in your life? Was the beginning of our plane conversation. For the next 15 minutes, we spoke with growing enthusiasm and animation. We talked about the things we were doing, and especially what we were excited about. When Morton mentioned he was working in the area of older adults and looking at aging from a new and different perspective, Ken piped up and said he'd been thinking about similar issues. The term he was using was refire, an attitude of embracing the years ahead with enthusiasm rather than apathy. At that moment, this book was born. We continued talking nonstop, leaning over the airline seats that separated us. Finally, we had to be forcibly seated by the flight attendants so that the plane could take off. Throughout the 5-hour flight to New York, we continued to exchange ideas until the movie came on and silenced us. As we deplaned, we decided to meet soon to continue the conversation. By the time we met again, Morton had attended a birthday party for someone he had known in college. He came back intrigued by what he had observed. It wasn't just that everyone looked older. Of course they did. It was how differently they were approaching aging. While some seemed intellectually energetic and engaged in the world, others seemed to have little joy or sense of a future, nothing they were striving for. Coincidentally, Ken and his wife Margie had just returned from a 2-week cruise. Ken reported similar observations about his fellow travelers, most of whom were seniors. Some were vivacious, taking advantage of the classes and activities offered by the cruise ship, while others were withdrawn and didn't come alive until mealtime. As we discussed what each of us had experienced, we began wondering what accounted for these two different ways our age group was handling aging. Why were some people seeing the rest of their lives as an opportunity, while others were treating it as some kind of sentence? Talking about this with our adult children, we discovered that this view of life was not limited to seniors. Our middle-aged kids had some friends who also had the "best years are behind us" approach to life. We thought about those of our friends and colleagues who were embracing, rather than enduring, life, and tried to figure out what made them different. We concluded that much depended on what they believed about growing older and how they were approaching life. We also concluded that if those who were merely enduring could be helped to think differently, they might begin to behave differently and, if you will, refire. What are you going to do with the rest of your life to make it healthy, joyful, and meaningful? We wrote Refire as a guide to answering that question. In the parable and suggestions that follow, we hope you find inspiration to create an exciting future. Chapter 1. A Wake-Up Call. Larry Sparks took his wife's hand as they headed to the entrance of the hotel ballroom. He did so partly for moral support, but mostly because after nearly 40 years of marriage, he was prouder than ever of Janice, his still beautiful bride. "The registration table's got to be up here somewhere," he said. Around them, a crowd of people, nearly all of them approximately their age, moved with Larry and Janice toward the ballroom doors. Larry leaned over and whispered into Janice's ear, Who are all these old geezers? He joked. She looked over at him and smiled. I'm sure they're thinking the exact same thing about us. Nah, said Larry. At that moment, the registration table came into view beneath a sign that read, Lincoln High School, 45th Reunion, Go Eagles. Janice ducked into the ladies' room, and Larry was busy filling out a name tag when he heard a vaguely familiar voice behind him. Larry Sparks, is that you? Larry turned to see what he thought was a complete stranger making his way toward him. The man appeared world-weary, with slumped shoulders and thinning gray hair. It wasn't until the man gave Larry a good-natured slap on the back that he recognized Rob Briggs, the smart kid who'd helped him through chemistry and physics in his junior and senior years. Hey, Rob. Wow. Long time no see. How you been? You know, not great. But consider the alternative, right? Rob let out a half-hearted laugh. I wasn't sure if it was you or Kevin, but I knew it had to be one of you guys. With those words, Larry had a major flashback. This was just like high school, all right. During his entire 4 years at Lincoln, Larry was forever being mistaken for his fraternal twin, Kevin. I'm afraid Kevin couldn't make it, said Larry. He's off somewhere putting together another deal. Larry shook his head. The sibling rivalry he'd once felt with Kevin had mellowed. Still, he couldn't help but compare himself to his twin. So Kevin's still an overachiever, huh? Rob laughed. I guess things don't change that much in 45 years. Are you still with Janice? Absolutely, and we're having more fun than ever. Right on cue, Janice appeared at Larry's side. She recognized Rob at once and gave him a big hug. The three of them caught up on kids and careers and promised to reconnect during the big dinner and dancing event at the end of the weekend. 2 nights and a lot of reminiscing later, Larry and Janice returned to the hotel ballroom and enjoyed a surprisingly good reunion dinner. After a chocolate mousse dessert, the music began. Janice, the extrovert of the pair, dragged Larry onto the dance floor for a few numbers and then encouraged him to join her in finding and catching up with old friends. They were heading back to their table when they finally found Rob again. You two having fun? Rob asked. We're having a blast with a lot of folks, said Janice, but I'm worried about a few people in this crowd. What do you mean? Asked Rob. Based on our observations over the course of this weekend, the biggest activity for some of our fellow classmates is eating, Larry replied. And eating a lot, Janice added, not to mention drinking. Rob shrugged. Isn't that what you're supposed to do at a reunion? Larry nodded toward the dance floor. Yeah, but they're missing out on the dancing, and only a few people have turned out for the outdoor activities that have been happening the past couple of days. I at least try to stay in shape. As I always say to Janice, someday I want to be one of the 4 guys on the tour bus in Hawaii. The tour bus in Hawaii? Said Rob, looking puzzled. Larry laughed. Yeah, whenever you see a crowd of seniors getting off a tour bus in Hawaii, there are about 30 well-preserved women and only about 4 old guys, because all the other men have died off. They all had a good laugh at that. Kidding aside, said Janice, it makes me sad that some of our fellow Eagles are approaching getting older as a life sentence rather than a wonderful opportunity. It's not just seniors who act that way, said Rob. I work with a bunch of 30 and 40-year-olds at a tech firm. You'd be shocked how many of these people do nothing after work but go home to their couches, complaining about old athletic injuries and mumbling jokes like, old age is no place for sissies. That's a funny line, but it's a terrible motto, said Janice. I want to embrace what's left of life, not complain about it. Larry, an avid golfer, nodded and said, I know I'm on the back nine, but I want to finish strong. If you want to finish strong, that's the person you should talk to, said Rob. He pointed to a handsome man with a thick head of salt and pepper gray hair who was chatting with some others near the dance floor. Is that our 9th grade biology teacher, Mr. Jeffrey? Asked Larry. Yeah, said Rob, but it's Dr. Jeffrey now. He taught for a couple of years but left teaching to go to graduate school and get his PhD. He now heads the Department of Psychology at our local university and teaches in the Interdisciplinary Psychology/Philosophy program. He's become pretty well known. Really, you should go talk to him. Larry tapped Dr. Jeffrey on the shoulder. "Excuse me, sir, you were my favorite science teacher." He extended his hand. "Larry Sparks, and this is my wife, Janice."
"Good to see you, Larry," said Dr. Jeffrey, vigorously shaking Larry's hand.
"And hello, Janice." "Biology wasn't exactly my best subject," said Larry. "Thanks for the B on that final. I know you were being kind."
"I'm sure you earned it," Dr. Jeffrey said with a laugh.
"I have to say, you look great," said Larry. "What are you up to these days? Are you retired?"
"I'm not even considering it," bellowed Dr. Jeffrey. "Some of the greatest people in my field made their best contributions in their later years. I'm not retiring. I'm refiring."
"Refiring? That sounds intriguing," said Janice. "What does it mean?" Dr. Jeffrey didn't hesitate in answering. "To refire is to approach life with gusto. It's to see each day as an opportunity for adventure and learning. It's to infuse passion and zest into every area of your life. Emotional, intellectual, physical, and spiritual. Heart, head, body, and soul." He punctuated each word with the very passion of which he spoke.
"Sounds like you've given this some serious thought," said Janice.
Dr. Jeffrey nodded. "I've spent the better part of the past decade studying aging and exploring how the later decades in life can be rewarding and dynamic rather than limited and depressing. I teach and write extensively on the subject. I'll be happy to give you guys some coaching if you ever feel yourself falling into a rut." Before Larry or Janice could answer, a woman in a red dress grabbed Dr. Jeffrey by the sleeve and pulled him onto the dance floor. All the way home, Larry and Janice compared notes on the reunion. Once again, they talked about how sad it was that some of their classmates seemed resigned to declining health, limited activities, stale relationships, and dreams turning to dust.
"Do you think we're in a rut?"
Janice's question took Larry aback.
"No. Why?"
"You don't exactly seem as excited about your construction business as you used to be. And I know I'm not approaching my life with gusto and infusing it with, what did Dr. Jeffrey call it? Passion and zest."
"Yeah, but come on," said Larry, suddenly feeling defensive as he pulled into the garage.
"Is that even realistic? I mean, to a certain extent, life really is a grind."
"Now that's a zesty attitude right there," kidded Janice as she got out of the car.
Inside the house, the phone was ringing.
"I'll get it," said Larry. He raced into the kitchen and caught it on the final ring.
"Hello?"
The line was silent. Larry thought he'd missed the caller and was about to hang up when he heard the distinct sound of a woman crying.
"Hello? Who is this?"
"It's Angie."
Angie, his brother's wife. Beneath her snuffling, her voice was very small. "Are you okay, Ange?"
"He's gone, Larry."
She sobbed openly now. A cold wave of fear flowed through Larry's body.
"What? Who's gone?"
"Your brother had a massive heart attack. He's gone, Larry. Our Kevin is gone."
Chapter 2. A Visit with Dr. Jeffrey. Over the next several months, Kevin's death had a major impact on Larry. While he'd loved his brother with all his heart, he had always been concerned that Kevin was missing out on life because he was working all the time. Kevin's career had taken its toll not only on his health, but also on his relationships. Angie was his third wife. Kevin had three kids from prior marriages. Reconnecting with them at the funeral, Larry realized they hadn't known their father very well. Kevin had always talked about the great things he planned to do someday when things slowed down. Now that day would never come. "I'm seriously thinking about stepping back from the business, Janice." Janice looked up from packing her briefcase. "That's ironic. Here I am getting ready to interview to be the director of Learning is for Everyone, and you're planning on cutting back." For the past 5 years, Janice had been a committed volunteer at Learning is for Everyone, an organization that brought college students together with underprivileged kids for tutoring.
"The timing doesn't sound ideal," said Larry. "This means you're not going to be around nearly as much."
Janice said, "I know this isn't perfect timing for you, but the job's not going to be full-time, and when this opportunity came up, I thought about Kevin's death
and I started to wonder, what am I waiting for? Remember, your old teacher Dr. Jeffrey encouraged us to refire and add some zest to our lives, right? But as I recall, refiring wasn't just about working. Jeffrey mentioned relationships, learning, and other things too. Kevin's death has really got me thinking how much time I'm spending working. So I know I want to refire, but I'm not sure what that will look like for me. Janice closed her briefcase and put it aside. Dr. Jeffrey offered to give us coaching about refiring. This seems like the perfect time to take him up on that offer, since we're both searching for what's ahead, for each of us personally as well as for us as a couple. Let's go see him, said Larry. As Larry and Janice pulled into the university parking lot for their appointment with Dr. Jeffrey, their first problem was finding a place to park. Now I see why they say a university consists of thousands of people gathered together around a common parking problem, Larry joked. That certainly seems to be true today, doesn't it? Said Janice. I remember reading about Clark Kerr's final speech when he stepped down years ago as president of the University of California. He said he wished he'd known at the beginning of his tenure what he knew then, namely the three goals of a university. First, winning football for the alumni. Second, sex for the students. And third, parking for the faculty. That's a good one, said Larry with a laugh. After finally finding a spot, they walked to Dr. Jeffrey's building, where they sat in a pleasant waiting room until the receptionist called their names and ushered them to his office. Dr. Jeffrey stood to greet them. Come on in, he said. We appreciate your kind offer to give us some refiring coaching, said Larry. Well, this works out for me too, because telling me about your experience will help me in my research, Dr. Jeffrey replied. Speaking of research, said Janice, what are you finding in your studies that could help us in our refiring journey? First, said Dr. Jeffrey, it's become clear to me that a lot of people who have experienced outer success in their lives have inner turmoil. They are not lovers of themselves. We found conclusive evidence that achievements and accumulation of wealth do not make people happy. Happiness is an inside-out job. I'd like to hear more about that, said Larry. When you're externally motivated around your achievements and popularity with others, somehow that doesn't result in inner peace. Your focus is on success, which plays out in accumulation of wealth, recognition, and power/status. While there's nothing wrong with accumulating wealth, receiving recognition for your efforts, and having some power and status, what's wrong is when you think that's who you are. When that's the case, you have to keep on getting more of each of those. Interesting, said Larry. What's the answer to that? There's plenty of emphasis on success in our culture. I'm finding we have to help people focus on significance as well. What's the difference? Asked Janice. Significance focuses on three different measures: generosity, service, and loving relationships. Generosity is the opposite of accumulating wealth. It involves giving your time, your talent, and your treasure to others, Dr. Jeffrey continued. That makes sense, said Larry. I've always thought that making money for money's sake wasn't very valuable, but it has given me the opportunity to help others. Remember, said Dr. Jeffrey, in our later years, it's not only money we can share, but also our wisdom, our time, and our talent. That leads to the second aspect of significance, service, which is the opposite of recognition. Now the focus is on helping others, not yourself. A pastor friend of mine put it well when he said that real joy in life comes when you get in the act of forgetfulness about yourself. And that happens when you are doing something kind for someone else, said Janice. That's true, said Dr. Jeffrey. That leads to the third aspect of significance, which is loving relationships, the opposite of power/status. A friend of mine, John Ortberg, wrote a wonderful book called When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. It's a story about him and his grandmother. When he was young, she was an incredible Monopoly player. At the end of the game, she had everything and John had nothing. She would get this grin on her face and say, John, someday you're going to learn how to play the game. Dr. Jeffrey continued, One summer when John was about 13, a kid moved next door who was an ace Monopoly player. John practiced with him every single day because he knew his grandmother was coming in September. When that day arrived, John ran to greet her and said, "Hi, Grandma, how about a Monopoly game?" His grandmother's eyes lit up and she said, "Let's go, John." But John was ready for her this time. He came out of the chute and wiped his grandmother out. He said it was the greatest day of his life. His grandmother smiled and said, "John, now that you know how to play the game, let me teach you a lesson about life. It all goes back in the box." "What do you mean?" John asked. She said, "Everything you accumulated, all the hotels, houses, utilities, cash, it all goes back in the box." "And how true that is," said Dr. Jeffrey with a smile. "You can accumulate all the money, recognition, and power/status you'll want in life, but at the end, it all goes back in the box. The only thing you get to keep is your soul, and that's where you store who you loved and who loved you." "That reminds me of the ending of the movie Ghost," said Janice. "It ties right into that." "I think I saw that a number of years ago," said Dr. Jeffrey. "Yes, it's been around for a while. It's the story about a young financier, played by Patrick Swayze, who was killed by a supposed friend. He gets to stay on Earth as a ghost to protect his girlfriend Molly, played by Demi Moore. And he gets to talk to her through the help of a clairvoyant by the name of Oda May, played by Whoopi Goldberg. At the end of the film, Sam has avenged his death and he, Molly, and Oda May are on the rooftop of Molly's apartment building. A white light starts coming toward them. Oda May says, "They're coming for you, Sam." Sam turns and looks at Molly. When he was alive, he never told Molly he loved her. She would say, "Sam, I love you," and he would say, "Ditto." Now, with tears coming down his face, he says, "Molly, I love you. I've always loved you." And with tears in her eyes, she says, "Ditto." Sam turns toward the light, then stops and turns to Molly one last time. "Molly," he says, "the remarkable thing about this is that you can take the love with you." "Wow," said Larry, "and that's the only thing we're going to take out of this world, isn't it?"
"I believe so," said Dr. Jeffrey.
"Wait a minute," said Janice. "This gets to what Larry and I were talking about this morning. He's thinking about cutting back on his work to focus on significance, but I feel like I've been focusing on significance for years, raising the kids and volunteering my time. I'd like to try a little success at this point in my life." She turned to Larry. "And wouldn't you get a kick out of being introduced as the spouse of the director of Learning is for Everyone?" Larry laughed. "It may take me a few days to get used to it." Success and significance are not necessarily in conflict, and they don't have to happen in that order, said Dr. Jeffrey. "Wanting to experience a bit of success doesn't mean you've abandoned significance. The key," he continued, "is to make sure you are solid emotionally, intellectually, physically, and spiritually. Or, as I mentioned to you at the reunion, in the heart, the head, the body, and the soul. When those four are integrated, you become whole and create a powerful foundation for moving forward in your life. It establishes a framework for being a wise, loving, mature, creative, and balanced person." "Sounds a little complicated," said Larry. "Establishing that balance is not something that happens overnight," Dr. Jeffrey replied. "When I work with people on this, I tell them to anticipate at least a year-long learning curve, focusing on each area for at least 3 months." "Where should we start?" asked Larry. "Let's start with your hearts. The emotional side. That's where our relationships come into play. But rather than me explaining the importance of emotional balance, I'd like for you to go see some friends of mine, Wendy and Harold Tong. They're a terrific couple who have just backed off from very active careers. They understand well the emotional side of life, and I think they could give you a good handle on how relationships can really enhance this stage of your journey. My assistant will give you their contact information. Please go see them. After you've had a chance to think about and apply what you learned from them, let's get back together in about 3 months or so." Sounds good, said Larry, as he smiled at Janice, and thanks for helping us get started on our journey to refire. Pause, reflect, take action. Considering the emotional, intellectual, physical, and spiritual parts of your life, which one is getting the least attention, and how can you change that? What are you doing out of habit rather than zeal? What is the current balance between your striving for success and achieving significance? What can you do to be of service to others? Choose one service-oriented activity you can commit to doing now. The first key, refiring emotionally. Chapter 3. Love is the Key. The sun was breaking through the morning clouds when Janice and Larry arrived at the Tongs' house. Wendy and Harold greeted them at the door and welcomed them inside. Dr. Jeffrey told us you're interested in talking about refiring, Wendy said as she showed them to the living room. That term took us aback because we've been through a major refiring, literally. What do you mean? Asked Janice. Our original home was burned down in the wildfires that devastated this area a few years ago, said Harold. Talk about refiring. We had to refire from the ground up. That must have been awful. What did you do? Asked Larry. We rented a home nearby and were planning to rebuild, Harold replied. But our daughter-in-law was walking her dog in the neighborhood one morning and discovered that this house, which we'd always admired, had a for sale sign on the lawn. We were able to buy it and save the time and expense of rebuilding, so our house, refiring, has a happy ending. But I'm sure you didn't come over to hear all about us, Wendy said, as Janice and Larry settled onto the Tongs' comfortable sofa. Dr. Jeffrey said he thought we might be able to help you refire emotionally. If you could make it through your house burning down, you obviously know a thing or two about emotional resilience, said Janice. I suppose we do, said Harold. Emotional health is certainly something we've worked on over the years, said Wendy. It's especially important in relationships. We try to stay emotionally engaged in our relationships with family and friends, as well as with each other. Dr. Jeffrey said that having loving relationships was a big part of what he called moving from success to significance, said Janice. Tell us about how you've refired emotionally with family and friends. A while ago, began Harold, we noticed that sometimes we were being a little judgmental. If a friend did something that offended us, we tended to write them off. We realized that if we kept that up, pretty soon we'd be out of friends. Then I remembered something my mother told me when I was young. She said, "There is a pearl of good in everyone if you search for it." That's beautiful, said Larry. What a great way to look at others. We thought so, said Wendy. So we started searching for the pearls. We began loving people even when they were engaging in unlovable behavior. That doesn't sound all that easy to do, said Janice. It wasn't, the first couple of times, said Wendy. Then Harold and I realized we'd had plenty of practice with our kids. How many kids are lovable all the time?
Nobody's kids that I know, admitted Janice.
But have you ever heard of anyone sitting their kids down and saying, "This just isn't working out, we have to split up"? Larry laughed and said, "Good point. Even if the parents are divorced and hate each other, they continue to love their children. But aren't there some people whose pearl is so buried that they're not healthy to be around?" asked Janice. Wendy nodded. "Sure, but we've found that's the exception rather than the rule." "Tell us about how you've refired your relationship with each other," said Larry. "We started paying attention to our feelings," said Wendy. "We noticed we had positive emotions and negative emotions. We consciously started placing more attention on the positive feelings."
"The key is recognizing which are which," said Harold. "To us, positive feelings are like love in action."
That's an interesting way to put it, said Larry, but I'm not sure I know what you mean. Could you tell us more about that?
Of course, said Harold. I'm sure you've been to a lot of weddings.
We have indeed, said Janice.
You've undoubtedly heard the love passage from the Bible, continued Harold.
You mean the one that goes, love is patient, love is kind? Asked Larry.
Exactly, said Harold. It comes from 1 Corinthians 13. Whether you're religious or not, it includes a wonderful list of positive feelings and the resulting love-based behaviors. In fact, I know it by heart. Harold recited, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always perseveres.
I've always loved hearing that at weddings, said Janice.
Wendy said, it is beautiful, isn't it? Harold and I talk about that passage periodically and ask ourselves if we're living by it. When we recite it out loud, it helps us take a look at our feelings. Right away, we know which ones we need to be working on.
It occurs to me, said Larry, that the opposite of those positive feelings are negative emotions, like frustration, impatience, or even anger.
That's right, said Harold. Take that positive statement that love is not easily angered.
Having a bad temper is the one thing that can get us off of a loving track faster than anything else.
How do you control that if anger is a problem for you? Wondered Janice.
First, you have to recognize it as a problem, said Wendy. Isn't that right, Harold?
Absolutely, said Harold.
Everyone has negative feelings at times, and while we may not be able to control how we feel, we are responsible for how we react to those feelings.
Whenever I feel anger building, I try to stop and take a deep breath. If I can, I might go for a short walk to calm down, because I know if I let that anger out, it's not going to help the situation or make the world a better place.
I think all of us would like to make the world a better place, said Larry.
Harold nodded.
Let me ask you, do you have a plan for how you're going to do that?
Larry and Janice laughed.
I guess we don't, Janice said with a smile.
Yet we can all make the world a better place through the moment-to-moment decisions we make as we interact with the people we come in contact with at home, at work, and in the community, said Harold.
You're not talking about one day at a time. You're talking about one moment at a time, said Larry.
That's right, said Harold.
Suppose, as you leave your house in the morning, your spouse yells at you and it upsets you. What do you do?
You have a choice. You can yell back, or you can go back in the house, ask what's upsetting them, hug them, and wish them a good day.
If someone cuts you off on the way to work, you have a choice. Will you chase that person down and make an obscene gesture, or will you take a deep breath and hope they don't hurt themselves or somebody else?
We have choices all the time about how we deal with others.
That's true, said Janice. I forget that sometimes.
It's never too late to understand that we have choices, said Wendy.
For example, sometimes we get into ruts, not only with each other, but also with our friends. We need to become more spontaneous and ready to go. Doing the same things the same way with the same people doesn't contribute to your emotional health or anyone else's.
I read an interesting story about that recently, said Larry. This man realized he didn't know most of his neighbors very well. Everybody just drove in and out of their garages. They rarely talked to each other or spent time together. He wanted to change that. He remembered that when he was a kid, he and his friends had some of their best times at sleepovers. So he decided to go out on a limb. He sent a note to all his neighbors that said, "Most of us don't know each other very well, but I'd like to change that. How about getting together next Saturday for a summer potluck? I have a big backyard with a fire pit. So come over, play some badminton, and hang out. If any of you want to make a mini vacation of it, bring your toothbrush and let's make it a sleepover. I have an empty guest room that sleeps too, plus a sofa bed.
All you need to do is bring your favorite food. Don't forget the marshmallows.
I'll bet most of his neighbors thought the sleepover part was a little weird, maybe even a little risky, said Harold.
Most of them probably did, said Larry. Quite a few neighbors came for the potluck, had a great time, and went home that evening. But one of his neighbors took the invitation to heart and came prepared for a sleepover. This neighbor was an older gentleman who lived close by. The host had known him casually for some time. They talked throughout the evening, watched each other's favorite television shows, and even roasted some marshmallows over the fire. Finally, the two neighbors retired to separate rooms for a good night's sleep. In the morning, they had breakfast together, went for a walk, and parted good friends. The older gentleman spread the word to all his neighbors about what a meaningful time the sleepover had been. Pretty soon, walks, dinners, movies, and even sleepovers became a common practice. The neighborhood became a real neighborhood.
What fun, said Wendy. That story perfectly highlights the importance of being flexible and open to new experiences. As I said earlier, without flexibility, you can get in a rut. You can't enrich your current relationships or forge new ones if you keep on doing the same things in the same ways.
What I hear you suggesting, said Janice, is that we need to become engaged with others.
That's right, said Harold. We can't keep growing emotionally if we isolate ourselves from others. Wendy and I believe that feedback is the breakfast of champions. If you really get to know others well, you'll grow close enough that they'll be willing to praise you when you're fun to hang around with and give you honest feedback when you're being obnoxious or a stick in the mud.
So our suggestion for the emotional aspect of your journey to refire, said Wendy, is to get to really know each other, as well as the people around you. Be willing to take interpersonal risks and learn from them.
We really appreciate your insights and suggestions, said Larry.
Yes, thank you, said Janice. Larry and I will see what we can do to grow emotionally with each other as well as with the people around us. With that, Larry and Janice gave their new friends a hug and headed home. Pause, reflect, take action. What might you do to reach out to someone close to you, a spouse or good friend, to revitalize that relationship? What new people can you reach out to and make a part of your life? What can you do to let others know you care about them? What is your plan for making the world a better place? Tell a person you care about that you appreciate them. Chapter 4. Building Relationships. It didn't take long for Larry and Janice to begin applying what they had learned from Wendy and Harold. In fact, it started happening the next day.
Who was that on the phone? Asked Janice.
Oh, it was Rob.
Janice frowned. Again? Seems like we've been seeing an awful lot of him since the reunion. What did he want?
Come on, Janice. I know Rob's not the best listener, but remember what Wendy and Harold told us about looking for the pearl of good in everyone.
Yeah, but any time I say anything to Rob, he hijacks the conversation and makes it about him.
Larry smiled.
Yeah, but do you know a more generous guy than Rob?
You're right. We've had some wonderful times with him. So what did he want?
He asked if we wanted to go see a movie with him tonight.
Tonight? Janice questioned.
Yeah, tonight. And he wants to go in about a half hour. But the movie's playing at the Cinema Guild, and we'd have to meet him in 20 minutes, Larry explained. I really hate the Cinema Guild.
So what did you say? Asked Janice.
I said no, because there isn't enough time and the movie isn't something I'm interested.
Well, what's the movie? Janice interrupted.
It's some type of a cartoon, said Larry.
You mean an animated movie?
Yeah, a cartoon.
No, animated movies are not cartoons. They're a new kind of media that you're not very comfortable with.
It's not that I'm not comfortable with it. I'd just rather watch real people.
You may want to rethink that, said Janice.
Now, why did you say no?
Because, like I told you, there's not enough time, and it's at the Cinema Guild, a theater I don't like, and it's the kind of movie I'm not sure I want to see.
Honey, if you listen to what you just said, it sounds kind of stuffy, and maybe even a little bit rigid. Remember what Wendy and Harold taught us yesterday about being flexible.
Me? Stuffy and rigid? Said Larry with a smile.
Yeah, you.
What are you talking about? Larry joked.
We haven't seen a movie in several weeks, so if Rob invites us to one, why not go?
But we haven't even had dinner yet.
So what? We can skip dinner, or even have popcorn for dinner.
Popcorn for dinner?
Yes, popcorn for dinner.
That just sounds weird.
Maybe it's weird to you, but it sounds like fun to me.
Would it be more fun to stay at home, cook dinner, eat, and do nothing for the rest of the night?
Come on, Larry, let's give it a try.
I'm going to call Rob back right now and tell him we'll meet him.
What do we have to lose?
Larry reluctantly agreed, mumbling that he still thought it sounded pretty weird. Within 20 minutes, Larry and Janice were running up to the box office where Rob had just arrived.
Okay, let's do it, said Janice.
As they walked in, Larry was still grumbling, but Janice was having great fun.
How about a hot dog? Janice suggested.
A hot dog?
Yeah, how about a hot dog? We haven't had dinner yet. Let's have a hot dog, a soda, and a cookie for dessert.
A hot dog, soda, and a cookie for dessert. There goes our healthy eating plan.
Yep, I don't think this one time of eating junk food is going to hurt us. Doing something different and spontaneous will be fun.
After the movie, Rob, Janice, and Larry engaged in a lively conversation as they walked toward the exit.
What a terrific movie, said Larry.
Yes, said Rob. I'd read the reviews and thought I'd like it.
And if Rob likes something, he assumes everybody will like it, said Janice with a laugh.
In this case, Rob was right, said Larry. I did like it, even though it was a cartoon.
An animated movie, Rob and Janice chimed in.
Okay, an animated movie.
The three went into a cafe to get some coffee and continued talking about the movie.
Rob said he had been planning to spend the evening at home until he picked up the paper and saw the movie's positive reviews.
I thought of calling you guys, said Rob, but the past few times when I've called at the last minute, you seemed to get offended. I was almost going to pass.
I wasn't surprised when you said no, Larry, but was really happy when Janice called back and said yes.
With that, Larry and Janice told Rob about their discussions with Dr. Jeffrey and their commitment to refiring their relationships, looking for the positive and being more spontaneous.
Good for you two, said Rob.
I'm glad you started refiring with me. And doing things at the last minute is not such a bad idea.
That we have busy lives is just a fact of life. But when good things pop up unexpectedly, we should jump at the chance to say yes.
But the way I like to go to the movies is first to go out to dinner, then see the movie, and then have a chance to talk afterward, Larry said.
Yeah, but it doesn't always have to be that way, said Rob.
Did you have fun tonight? Do you wish you'd stayed home? Are you sorry you're sitting here with us instead of watching TV at home?
Sometimes doing things at the last minute is fun.
As the conversation continued, Larry thought, I guess Harold and Wendy were right. Not only am I having a good time with Rob, but he's even encouraging me to practice what they preached.
The following week, Janice came home excited.
Larry, I got the director's job, she announced.
Why don't we celebrate by having Phil and Kelly over for dinner?
Larry and Janice had known Phil and Kelly for more than 2 decades. Phil was a retired accountant, and Kelly had been a fourth-grade teacher at the local elementary school until a few years ago, when she began doing pottery and entering her work in local art shows.
That's a good idea, said Larry. We haven't seen them for a long time. When should we have them for dinner?
Well, how about tonight? Said Janice.
Tonight?
Yeah, tonight.
But it's already 6 o'clock. They probably have plans, said Larry.
Well, maybe they don't.
But even if they don't have plans, how are we going to get a dinner together in an hour? He asked.
Let's go get some of that great takeout from the Thai restaurant.
Takeout?
Yeah, takeout, said Janice. But I like it when we cook a really nice meal for our friends, Larry countered.
Janice smiled. Are you being rigid again? She kidded. Are you forgetting what a good time we had with Rob last week?
Okay, said Larry. I'll give it a try again.
Janice put the phone on speaker and dialed Phil and Kelly's number. When Kelly picked up, Janice asked, Hey, what are you guys doing for dinner? On the other end of the line, Kelly said,
We haven't thought about it yet.
Why don't you come over here for some takeout Thai food?
When?
Asked Kelly. How about in an hour?
In about an hour?
Yeah.
Well, hold on.
There was a pause, and Janice and Larry could hear Kelly consulting with Phil. Suddenly, Kelly was back on the line.
Okay,
she said. At dinner that night, Larry and Janice talked with Phil and Kelly about what had happened. They shared about their meeting with Wendy and Harold and described their experience the week before, going to the movies with Rob at the last minute. At that point, Larry stood up and announced, Okay, I am declaring us charter members of the Last Minute Gang.
The Last Minute Gang? Asked Janice.
Yes, the Last Minute Gang, and I'm going to call Rob and tell him he's a charter member too. After that, they all got excited about the Last Minute Gang. They admitted that they had fallen into the rut of doing the same things, the same way, with the same people. After a while, they began to form Last Minute Gangs with their other friends. When asked what the Last Minute Gang was all about, Larry would explain that being a member of the gang meant you felt free to ask anybody to do anything at the last minute. The person who answered the call had the right to say yes or no, but unless they had a compelling reason not to say yes, for example, they were already eating when you invited them for dinner, or were already at the movies when you invited them to a play, they said yes. Larry summed it up this way. Unless there's a legitimate reason to say no, you say yes. Larry's willingness to be open to new experiences was soon tested.
So, how did it go? Janice asked as Larry came walking in the door.
Incredible, said Larry.
Really? Said Janice. I'm surprised. What made it incredible?
Larry had just come back from dinner at a sushi restaurant with his 15-year-old grandson, Paul. Larry had been reluctant to go, thinking, How can you have a whole meal of raw fish? But Paul had prodded him, and Janice had urged him to go.
So, what happened? Asked Janice.
First, it took me a half hour to find the place, because it was in the back of a shopping mall, and you know how I am with directions, said Larry.
Of course I know how you are with directions. The GPS has saved your life.
You're right. When I finally found the restaurant, it was like a diner, with a long counter and three or four tables. I arrived first, so I sat at the counter and watched the people come in. In a few minutes, every single seat was taken. Everyone kept looking at the chefs, who were cutting and sorting and putting things on plates, then giving them to people. When I got a menu, the only thing I could order was something to drink, so I got a beer for myself and a soda for Paul. At that point, a server came over and asked me if it was my first time at a sushi place. I admitted it was and asked her how it worked. She smiled and said, We keep bringing you food until you tell us to stop.
Really?
I said. I didn't ask how much it cost because Paul had already told me, It's going to be really expensive, Grandpa. A few minutes later, Paul arrived and gave me a hug. I was drinking my beer, he began drinking his soda, and one of the chefs behind the counter came over and said, Ready? And Paul said, You bet. So for the next hour, they served us sushi. Every dish was different, and every time the chef told us whether to put a sauce on it and what sauce to use.
And? Asked Janice.
And it was great. The food just kept coming and coming. Paul showed me a new way to use chopsticks and how to put the sauces on. He was so funny and friendly that he had everyone in the restaurant smiling.
We finally were stuffed, continued Larry. So I paid the bill and we headed out of the restaurant. That's when the best part of the evening started.
What happened? Asked Janice.
Paul had never been in my new car, and when he saw it, he was thrilled.
Larry had bought a convertible a few weeks ago.
With his new attitude of thinking outside the box, he made a vow that as long as he was able to drive, he would have a convertible. So I asked Paul, should I put the top down? Of course, he said, sure. So in a few minutes, we were driving along Wilshire Boulevard with the top down, the stars bright, and the radio blasting jazz. Paul was sitting back and tapping his knee with his eyes closed. He opened his eyes, gave me a big smile, and said, two cool dudes doing the town. I have rarely felt so complimented, said Larry, and I have really started to refire our relationship. So what did you learn from this experience? Asked Janice. I'm learning that even though I thought I was open to new experiences, I still have a ways to go. As you would guess, my idea would have been to go out to a restaurant where I'm comfortable, where I know what the rules are, what to order, and what to expect. Going to a sushi restaurant with Paul, in an area I didn't know, made me feel uncomfortable. But you decided to go for it, said Janice with a smile. You bet I did, and it was one of the best things that's ever happened between Paul and me. Now I have to figure out how to take it to the next level. Over the next 3 months, Larry and Janice refired their relationships, trying new things, connecting with their neighbors, looking for the pearls in people, and reaching out to old friends in new ways. After a particularly fun night at a concert with some friends they hadn't seen in years, Janice said, I've been having so much more fun since we've made a conscious effort to love and connect with people and try new experiences. If we keep this up, we'll have to call Wendy and Harold and tell them what's been happening with us around refiring emotionally. Pause, reflect, take action. When was the last time you ventured out of your comfort zone, and what did you do? What new things have you thought about doing but have not acted on? If you were going to start your own last-minute gang, who would you invite? When will you begin? Choose one other person/couple to help you start a last-minute gang and contact them.